This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9. Bent Notes is our weekly jazz program going to air each Sunday night.
My special guest here on Bent Notes, he is a repeat offender. He's a repeat guest. He's a composer and director of his own series of five works, as I said, entitled The Usefulness of Art. He's a member of the ensemble and he's a very busy musician. At first glance of the title of his final work in the series, The Kites of a Tianjin, I hope I've expressed that correctly, I'm expecting to see him run across the performance space dragging a kite behind him as he tries to get it to fly. It is my pleasure to welcome back to Bent Notes here at Joy 94.9, Adam Simmons.
Thank you very much for that introduction, David.
My pleasure, Adam.
Yes, I've got a bit to do now.
Am I going to see you running across the stage with a kite flying in tow?
There might be. I'm not sure if I'll be running, but we've got a few kites.
I can imagine you might have a few around the place. Now, I am thinking that we might have to rename this program from Bent Notes to the Adam Simmons Show. The number of times we have him is amazing. Always new work or one greater festival of jazz and blues. That's coming up soon too.
That is coming up soon. Well, I may be in with another hat if you'll have me back soon.
Look, I think we can just work on that one. That'll be okay. Now, last time you were here at Bent Notes was back in April, so not all that long ago, with Ray Pereira for the fourth instalment of The Usefulness of Art called The Calling. And if we jump back even further, can you remind us about the inspiration for this entire series of works by a sculptor following a question, is art useful or just utilitarian to assist business to make money?
Yeah, and it's Rodin's thoughts about the, Auguste Rodin's thoughts about the usefulness of the artist were inspirational to me. Back when I was at VCA in the early 90s, trying to work out why I should be allowed to play music and what use am I in society, and his thoughts about 100 years ago now on the subject was that art, you know, he calls useful that which makes us happy.
And that's a nice definition.
It sort of was like, oh, well, that's kind of good. And then he also went on to describe the artist who takes pleasure in what they do, and that you can have bricklayer artists and masonry artists, and just the notion that you might go about the thing that you do, but with a sense of art and a sense of pleasure and creating happiness was kind of like, oh, that's kind of, that's a nice way to try and live. It would be a nice society if there was a bit more of that.
It would indeed, a bit more appreciation of what we individually can actually achieve, and recognising things that we do aren't just chores or jobs, but there's actually an opportunity to take, I suppose, to taking pride in what you do.
And about sharing, and about, you know, and it is about sharing that happiness. So, you know, you are thinking about others. So the inspiration for the suite, The Usefulness of Art, which I wrote many years later, but a few years ago now, was that kind of came about me rethinking some of these things in light of plight at the time of asylum seekers, refugees being stopped from coming, and a sense of just a lack of empathy at a national level. While I'm also reading a study about in the UK about how music develops empathy in children that get exposed to music. And it was sort of just all these different things. And it was, I didn't know what to do, I didn't feel like I knew how to deal with this or how to, and I was just feeling a bit useless. And I kind of went, well, all I can do is what I can do. And so, well, I'm an artist, so that's what I should do. And so at the time I'd been doing some sculpture for a couple of years. And so at the same time I sort of did a visual art sculptural show as well as this musical suite. And it's been interesting because it has just given me an opportunity to talk about art and its place in society.
As opposed to just art being on the wall.
Yeah, and about how it can bring us together as community. Then it's become the inspiration for this suite. This series. This is the fifth in a series, and it's the final in this kind of group of projects, but the usefulness of art, I'm hoping, as an umbrella, will kind of continue beyond this point.
Well, it would be nice to think that the theme of the usefulness of art is something that can hang around for many years to come as that umbrella, because it's a very valid question.
Yeah.
And it's a question that potentially people don't think of asking themselves.
No, and it, like, as I say, Rodin was talking about it 100 years ago, and you read his words and he's kind of complaining and just looking at, well, if people actually took note of art, you know, like at the moment, there's just, people have just got no time to do anything and they're not connecting with each other. And it's kind of like, he hasn't even got to the mobile phones and internet yet.
So has the series made you happy?
Well, like, it's made me a bunch of things. To be very honest, it's made me poorer. We had great support from Australia Council and Creative Victoria last year, and have had some great support from City of Melbourne this year, but I did need some additional funding this year to actually... I've got the basic stuff covered by City of Melbourne, so really thankful for that, but I have had to rely on the generosity of musicians. So, yeah, big thanks to them. But it's made me... That's one thing that has made me happy, is just the support from the musicians has been fantastic. It's been lovely to see faces in the audiences keep coming back, sometimes wearing their T-shirts, even accidentally.
Accidentally, right.
I had aspirations for it building community in some way, and it feels that... Like, that's not something that you can necessarily just manufacture.
No, it's not a manufacturable item, because you can look at two people and say build a community, but it doesn't do it. It's actually got to be something that those two people can have in common to be able to start that. And I think seeing your show can start that process with the people talking to each other about what was it, what did we enjoy.
Yeah. And it feels like there are conversations that have developed over the last, you know, sort of started off in March, beginning of last year, three projects last year, two this year. That sense of building, that sense of development from one thing to the next, it's been really daunting, with particularly last year the works were existing but hadn't necessarily been performed in that fashion. This year, two totally new works.
And they're not just a performance of a band getting on a stage on seats with music stands and general lighting and just playing some music. It's a much more theatrical presentation where you've used lighting, you've used the music from the band, as in live musicians and live music, and then you've added some visual aspects, whether it be chairs hanging from ceiling on ropes, video wall projection at the back of, I think that was the hills of Sri Lanka, two times ago, and clouds of cotton wool.
fishnets, actually.
Fishnets, was it?
From the Philippines.
Yeah.
And this time, some kites, imaginings of kites by Rachel Daisy, who happens to be my sister, but she's kicking ass in a bigger way than me as a national award-winning quilt maker.
Oh, wow.
Who's just had things as haute couture on the runways in Paris recently.
Oh, that's superb.
And Jean Poole, who will be doing some more visual projections. And
let's talk more about that shortly, but I'd like to have a listen to a little bit more of your music from Travelling Tales, a piece called Beginnings. Story about beginnings?
Really simply, it's kind of like a cleanser. It's each of these shows, you need to get into the space. So this is just a go, we're here. Oh, we're here. Okay.
Well, in that case, let's arrive at Beginnings.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
Adam, the fourth instalment of the series, The Art of Usefulness, was inspired by a visit you made to your mother's homeland of Sri Lanka, and that resulted in some beautiful visuals backing the band last time. What's inspired this fifth and final part of the series, The Kites of Tianjin?
The Kites of Tianjin. I knew that I wanted to do something with a master musician I'd worked with over about 10 years now, Wang Jingting, who's been based in Australia since about 1987 and is a exponent of the Sheng, which is a Chinese mouth organ.
I've never heard of that before. How does it differ from the mouth organ that I'd be able to imagine?
Well, it's free reed, so it doesn't matter whether you're blowing or sucking, you end up with the same pitch. And I believe it's actually the precursor in that way. The technology is the precursor for the pipe organs.
Oh, okay.
And you do see them across Asia in different forms, different names. But, yeah, the Sheng, it's... Ting has been pulled up by the police and... for carrying weapons, and it does look like a kind of crazy Tommy gun.
Right.
It's a whole bunch of pipes, sort of vertical pipes of different lengths. At the bottom, a kind of metal bowl that holds it, mouthpiece, sort of blowing pipe leading into it, and there's hot water, warm water, melting the wax that holds the reeds. In more ways than one, it sort of seems to resemble the kind of bong on steroids.
But it makes music.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And it does have that kind of Chinese sound quite obviously when you hear it. I knew that I wanted to do something with Ting as part of this. You know, most of the pieces as part of the series were about collaborating with different people and highlighting some of the diaspora of musicians I work with. So we were going to... I didn't quite know what it was going to be, but we were trying to get to Tianjin for a trade show last year, which didn't quite happen. But in my research, I looked up and learnt that Tianjin is famous for its kites. It's a sister city of Melbourne, so it sort of seemed appropriate that that might be something to explore in some way, this kind of connection. And then we didn't get there. I was like, oh... But we did get there earlier this year. And in the research last year, I'd learnt... I can't say his name. I should be able to say his name. But Wei... Feng Sheng Wei is... Or Wei Kites. There's a fourth-generation kite maker. And I'd learnt about his kites. And his ancestor made kites for the emperor. And so it's quite a famous kite-making family. And then just earlier this year, I'm sort of saying, oh, you know, we should go and see... You know, it'd be nice... And Ting is like, well, yeah, I brought him over a few years ago. We can go and visit him. And so we got to Tianjin and ended up going to visit him at his studio and being given copious amounts of tea, looking at all the kites. And we ended up, just bought a couple of simple kites. I didn't have quite the room to bring home some of the really ornate ones. But yeah, then we ended up at dinner with him. And his family and friends, and I'm sure that he spent much more money on us than we spent on the guys. And it's like, but yeah, so it was really beautiful, a lovely meeting, and then we went to a workshop that he was giving
on
a
making
couple of days.
Kites?
Yeah, and so we've made a very simple kite, which hopefully that'll form the basis of a couple of the things that will be part more of the set design that Rachel Daisy will be working on. So yeah, in that way, it's definitely inspired from that trip. I made kites as a kid, just simple ones.
I remember doing that too.
And so it was sort of an easy one when I saw that kites were famous in Tianjin. I went, oh, that's a great connection. And then just also trying to think of how wind brings life to these objects and that would otherwise just sit there, and thinking in that same way Ting and I deal with wind and on our instruments. So finding a way to kind of, you know, so in a way the kites become a metaphor for that, which becomes for me, I've slowly learnt that's just a metaphor for me learning how to live, you know, because if you learn how to breathe, it's a very handy life skill.
Very much so. Yes. I'm pleased that you've learned how to breathe there, Adam. So how do you determine what are the appropriate visual aspects to be incorporated into the whole presentation without going over? Because I can imagine that if once you let your thoughts run free, you could end up with some absolutely horrendously big, huge, costly batch of props and things. So how do you drag it back to something that fits?
There's a lot of conversations with the different people involved. So throwing a whole bunch of ideas up there and then seeing what comes down. Some of them have hopefully got some string and hopefully the wind keeps it up there, carrying that further. So it's trying to remember to keep it a little simple, and that the beauty of working at 45 downstairs with the lighting as well is just there's lovely simple ways where you can just kind of shift the space and you can bring it down to just a small intimate spot. You can open up to the stage. You can bring in the rest of the building and you sort of shine different aspects. And that with the visual component as well, that helps just... It's a little bit the opposite as a film, where the music helps enhance the visuals. In this way, the visuals can help enhance the music and the kind of impact. It's been a very interesting thing to be able to explore, and it's been lovely because we have four shows for each one. So being able to spend that time to actually go to the trouble of setting it up, it's helped me understand better what we can achieve. The results out of going to Tianjin and Shanghai with Ting earlier this year is that another project with Ting, Trio Origami, Wu Xing, the Five Elements project we did, will be returning to China in December.
Oh, very good.
Where we are being asked, well, can you make it bigger? And have you got a visual aspect? And it's like, well, yeah, we could add this and this, and we do have someone that can add the visuals. And because in China it's going to be, there's the potential for us to be doing 500 or 1,000 seat venues.
Oh, that's nice.
Where they've got that kind of thing, which is really hard to find here. But there's just, the economy of scale is, I've only been there for about a week and I've only seen a very small snippet, but it's just, yeah, it's another world, all unto itself.
So you'll be going across there with the production and then thinking to yourself, I need to duplicate these things tenfold.
Yeah.
What have you found putting this fifth work together that you weren't expecting?
Well, yeah. I wasn't expecting to use Gene Poole, who's doing the visuals. I was just thinking it was going to be kites, but it's kind of like, oh, no. But he's got some nice ideas because he worked on the last one and it's going to be much more subtle this time, but it's just like, oh, yeah, and he's now kind of part of it.
So you went in thinking you didn't need the visuals?
I was thinking it was just going to be kites, you know, physical kites without actual projection. But because there were some things that we couldn't, that weren't appropriate last time, but I was talking about some of the ideas for this coming show, Gene was kind of like, well, that sounds great. And it's also, it's been a big challenge because it's a standalone piece. It's each of the five works has been very much its own thing, except for the fact they're all written by me, and that I know that I'd sort of looked at the first three and I'd kind of understood for a while how each one had impacted on the writing of the next one. And so I kind of realised, oh, okay, I kind of actually have to perform these three before I can write these two.
That makes sense.
And in order for it to sort of still, for one to inform the next. I was going to do the one with, I thought the Sri Lankan one might be good at the end, but I kind of went, no, this one about breath, it's kind of more fundamental,
yes,
than even place and identity. You know, this one's in a sense about being. So I've just got this real high expectation of myself that somehow this is just going to lay you down and open you up to the vision of God, or I don't know. I'm not. It might simply be just a whole bunch of people playing some instruments, but the aspiration is for it to have a sense of traversed from a place in the beginning to this one at the end, so that while they're each standalone, it is...
There is a connection and there's a story line, so to speak.
And I think just this afternoon, I'm driving my family nuts because they've had hardly seen me, and I've just been trying to put the final shape to the pieces so I can actually get it to the musicians to practice.
Probably would be helpful.
Yeah. Yep. So I'll finish that after I get home.
Yeah, very good. Well, Adam, thank you so much for coming to the studio tonight. Really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you so much.
Look forward to having a chat in a couple of weeks' time, perhaps about another festival that's around. But in the meantime, 45 Downstairs from Thursday, July 26th, so that's Thursday week, to Sunday, July 29th, so that's four for events, for presentations, 7:30 on Thursday, Friday and Saturday, 3 p.m. on the Sunday. And for more details and tickets, 45downstairs.com. And more information on Facebook, you can search for The Usefulness of Art. You've got a piece that you're going to give us a little bit of a preview of the show.
This is from the last show. This is the final movement of The Calling, featuring Afro-Lankan drumming system. And it is the epilogue, and called Ice Cream Tuk-Tuks. What's the last bit? What did I say?
And cricket.
And cricket.
And cricket.
Yes, yes.
What an interesting name that is. My special guest has been Melbourne musician, composer, musical director and festival director Adam Simmons. Let's have a listen to the epilogue, Ice Cream Tuk-Tuk and Cricket.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.